Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Mito Action's monthly expert series. Today, Donna DeVito, a registered dietitian with over 20 years of experience, is with us to discuss her 2023 publication, Optimized Nutrition to Mitochondrial Disease Correlates to Improved Muscle Fatigue, Strength, and Quality of Life, published in Neurotherapeutics. She will also provide us with practical nutrition education and actionable tips to help optimize nutrition and support overall health. My name is Stephanie Harry. I'm the patient support coordinator at Mito Action and will be your host for today. Today's presentation will be recorded and available on Mito Action's website in the coming days, as well as on our podcast, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. We encourage you to ask questions throughout the presentation using the Q&A feature at the bottom menu bar of your screen. The chat section is for you to talk with other families who are in this space today, but please put all of your questions for the presenter in the Q&A section and not the chat. It helps me to stay better organized when we kick off our Q&A time at the end of today's presentation. We will do our best to get through as many questions as possible. Without further ado, I would like to introduce Donna DeVito. Donna is a registered dietitian with more than 20 years of experience specializing in pediatric nutrition. Her career has included subspecialty expertise in critical care, gastroenterology, bone health, neuromuscular diseases, leukodystrophies, and mitochondrial disease. She currently serves as a project manager in the Department of General Pediatrics at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, where she partners closely with physicians on quality and safety initiatives, leveraging her dual expertise in nutrition and clinical quality improvement to enhance patient care and outcomes. Before we get started, I just wanted to validate that nutrition and diet are hard, but an extremely important topic to discuss in the mitochondrial disease space. Nutrition can be tricky to talk about with general mito because mitochondrial disease can have so many different complications and different mechanisms of action. And yet, I believe our community knows and values and desires to have a deeper understanding of what we can do to enhance our nutrition to better care for ourselves with our various forms of mitochondrial disease. So, Donna, I just want to say thank you, thank you, thank you ahead of time for diving into this very, very important topic, joining us today, and just sharing your wisdom with this community.
Thank you for inviting me. I'm wearing my Mito Green shirt to show support. I love talking about nutrition, and I am so appreciative and thrilled to share, our findings from our paper and then share it with the community on, how to educate and, optimize your nutrition. So happy to be here.
All right, so if you want to go ahead and share your screen, we're going to go ahead and get started.
Absolutely. All right. How am I doing? Thumbs up. Love it. All right. And now it's not working. Let me go to another one. One second, everyone. This is the joy of technology. I'm going to start over again. I think I know what I did wrong here. All right. So thank you so much for inviting me. It was hard to come up with a title for the presentation today. So I have here, oh, I practiced so many times. It's from the beginning. Let's see if it'll work. Nope. One moment. This is what happens when you're nervous. No. All right. One more minute, everyone. I apologize. There's always something that goes wrong. All right, try again. Slideshow from the slide. Still not working. Well, let's see if I could change the layout here. Okay, how's that?
Perfect.
Awesome. Thank you, everyone, for your patience. So I have no financial disclosures. And the goals I'd like to talk about today are, what are the components of a nutrition assessment that I, as a dietitian, look for when I meet somebody new? I'd like to share with you all just basic nutritional needs for overall health, particularly with mitochondrial disease, and then share with you, most importantly, some tips and strategies for meal planning and meal preparation. So here's an outline for today. So I'm going to give you a pop quiz. And then I'd like to share the findings, review basic needs, give you some tips for planning, preparation, share some resources for you and a dietitian who you may meet that is not too savvy with mitochondrial disease. And then I'm going to give you another quiz to see if your grade improved. All right. So here's pop quiz time. And I'm only going to ask 10 questions and then raise a finger. Okay. So here we go. Raise a finger if you eat two to three, if you're an adult and you eat two to three meals a day and one snack, or if your child has three meals a day and then one to two snacks a day and you don't skip meals routinely. So that would be one finger, one point. Another finger, if you eat at least one fruit a day, and I'm not even asking for quantity of fruit, it could just be one blueberry, just to get you motivated. Number three, do you eat vegetables every single day? Any vegetable? Next, do you eat different types of meals for breakfast, lunch, dinner? Do you shake it up? Do you not eat the same meals day in and day out? Another finger up, if you know what antioxidants are, and if you could name at least three foods that are sources of high antioxidants. Another finger is about protein. Do you know, can you name protein sources from food that is not chicken, fish, beef, or poultry? So, what other sources of protein are there in our food supply? Another finger, if you can name calcium sources, food or drink other than milk, yogurt, cheese. Another finger, if you actually drink in between meals. So if throughout the whole day, if you're drinking fluids and you're, and not just drinking them at the time that you eat a meal. Okay, a couple more. Next, do you have a bowel movement every day or every other day? Next question, when you do have a bowel movement, is the consistency soft? And I hate to say like peanut butter consistency, but that's the ideal consistency. So there's your fingers. I'll give you a bonus point if you have actually seen a dietitian in the last year or two. So those of you that have five fingers up, I'll give you a good grade. If you have less than five, you definitely need more improvement because the questions I ask are wee basics for nutrition health overall. Okay, let's move on. So now I'd like to share with you our paper. So we did publish this, and as Stephanie mentioned, Journal of Therapeutics a few years ago. And there's a lot of interesting findings about how diet relates to muscle function, muscle strength, and quality of life. So I am so happy to share with you and then discuss how could we not make one of the paper findings, such as 74% of those. So in the paper, our study group, everyone was diagnosed with primary mitochondrial disease. So of the people, there was children and adults in the study, 74% had at least one GI symptom. And then we listed about nine different symptoms to choose from. And it was common for many people to have five to seven symptoms at once, believe it or not. And the most common were dysphagia, which is problems chewing, swallowing, and constipation. Almost half the children, 47%, half of the adults did not consume adequate calories, were not hydrated, and we noted that in the adults who were an appropriate weight or who were overweight or obese, that you weren't consuming adequate nutrients and you definitely weren't getting enough vitamins and minerals in your diet, yet had a good weight. So the good news that we did discover that, yes, when you did improve your nutrition, you optimized it, our individuals we met did improve their muscle strength and their quality of life, which is wonderful. So let's discuss that and let's talk about how to make that happen for you. Just want to sneak in here. What are the components of a nutritional assessment? I will never ever forget. It was an adult I met, and one of her friends dragged her in the clinic. She did not want to see me, dietitian. She's like, "What could a nutrition do for me?" So I was pleased to change her awareness and her mind around by the end of the visit. And I want to share with you what I take into account and then how I can help you. So first of all, Stephanie and I refer to this as the flower. So these are each circle is a component of a nutrition assessment. So let's start at the top where it says anthropometrics here. So knowing your weight and height, if you're a child less than 24 months, we're monitoring your head circumference and your head growth. I want to look at the patterns and how you're growing over time. Of course, I'm going to look at the foods you eat, the quantity, the quality of the food. We are also trained to look at medications and if there are any medications that affect your absorption of electrolytes, of vitamins, minerals, and such. So food-drug interactions. We're aware of food-food, we're trained in interactions. Next, I want to know about your kind of like your social life. How's your kitchen? How's it related to your eating? Do you have support? Do you have help? Do you have enough money for food? And so on. When it comes to endocrine, I definitely focus on bone health and blood sugar regulation. For activity and mobility, just how active you are able to be. What is the gross motor function? Do you have any hypotonia? Do you have progressive muscle weakness or your muscles just weak and they're staying the same? What kind of fatigue level do you have? Pulmonary, our lungs. Our lungs contribute a lot to calorie needs. So if your lungs are working hard to breathe, you're going to need more calories. Conversely, if you are on any supplemental oxygen support, such as BiPAP, CPAP, ventilator, you're going to have lower calorie needs because the lungs aren't working so hard to breathe. Gastroenterology, we say GI for gastroenterology. So there are many GI issues that occur in mitochondrial disease. And one of them is dysphagia, which I'll talk a little bit about today. And as a dietitian, of course, I'm going to look at your lab values. What is your body absorbing? Are they normal amounts? We never look at one lab in isolation. I like to share with you specifically calcium. This is a common, I guess, miss way of thinking. You know, oh, a calcium level is normal in my blood. That means I'm eating enough calcium. No, our body has self-regulation. We have to keep a set level of calcium in our bloodstream at all times. If we don't get enough through our diet, our body starts breaking down our bones for that equilibrium. So it's very important to get calcium and other nutrients for bone health, eating them and drinking them to keep our bones nice and strong. So at the bottom of the screen, I said detailed nutrition evaluations should include assessments of medications, muscle strength, fatigue, bone health, dysphagia. Those are the core that I am specifically honing in on when I meet someone with primary mitochondrial disease. A brief note about growth expectations and weight. So for children, we have growth charts. We have infant growth charts. And then when you turn 2 years old, we transition to the 2 to 20-year-old growth chart. For growth, the average population is growing. We're tracking and trending growth points, weight dots that I have here from 2 years old to 20 years old. Almost every single person follows the shape of this curve as you get older. Now, with a medical condition such as PMD, and your muscles aren't developing, aren't as we say muscle bulk, muscle mass, as big as they genetically could be or compared to the average, your weight will typically be lower just because muscles contribute a lot to our total body weight. So weak muscles, your weight is naturally going to be lower. Many times, doctors might say, oh, go see a dietitian because you're not growing. Your weight is just at the bottom of the curve. But if I meet someone and they're consuming enough calories and their weight pattern is following the shape of the curve as the one that you see on the left-hand side, that is normal growth to me. No concerns. If their child is following the right-hand side of the screen, you started off trending a certain pattern, then all of a sudden your weight You're not growing as you should as you get older and gaining it, taking in enough calories, absorbing them, growing. Your weight starts to be the same. It's, we say, with plateaus. And even after 6 months, it starts to affect your height. So you have the genetic capability to grow in height, but because you're not taking in enough calories, it's stunting your growth. So there is stunting in some medical conditions, you know, but we want to make sure that genetically you're consuming enough, and that's not truly why you're not growing in height. Let's move on to adult weight expectations. So as we know, each person is unique. We will each have our own optimal weight. There are some guidelines, you know, which are not one size fits all. So I encourage you to talk with the dietitian to figure out what an ideal weight is for you. And then once you reach that weight, are you maintaining it? One thing that we found in our paper is there were many adults that I have met who were at their goal weight, who were overweight, who were obese. They were malnourished. So they weren't consuming enough nutrition. And a lot of times a doctor will just look at an adult's weight and say, "Oh, your weight's good. I'm, you know, I don't worry about it." No. Okay. So please see a dietitian. I like to give you a little flavor about digestion and absorption. They're two different things. So the digestion process takes place in our bodies, starts with our mouth and ends with our anus. So if we'll look at the cartoon, the graphic on the left-hand side of the screen. So we start with chewing our food. We have digestive enzymes that help break down the food. We have some carbohydrate enzymes in our mouth that start with carbohydrate digestion. Then our food leaves our mouth, travels down our esophagus into our stomach. Our stomach does a lot of mechanical. The muscles, you know, churn our food. It's mixing with acid to help with further break down our food. So our stomach kickstarts our digestive processes, well, in addition to our mouth. And then it leaves our stomach and goes into our intestines. So there's three different parts of our intestines. We'll say the small intestine, the large intestine. Of the small intestine, there's two different types. There's the duodenum and the jejunum are different segments of the intestinal tract in the small intestine. And that's where almost all of our food gets absorbed, gets digested, and at that moment, it's absorbed as well. Then we have our colon, which primarily we absorb our bile acids and our water. Okay, so along the way, we have enzymes that also help with the digestion processes. We have bile as well. Let's look at the right-hand side of the screen where it says absorption processes. So the top picture, there's four pictures in a row. If we start with a picture of the intestines, they drew like a cross-sectional, you know, picture. So in our intestines, we have all these nooks, you know, or folds. And each of the folds, if we go to the third picture from left to right, we have the mountains, the hills there. So this is what each little piece of our intestine looks like. They're villi in those folds. And of the villi, if we go to the final picture on the right, there's little individual cells that at that point is where the food, when it's all broken down in absorption. So the bottom picture where it's labeled the intestinal epithelial cell is the same thing as the one on the top. I drew the arrow there. So notice at the bottom picture, it says microvilli. So those are those little fingers. That is where the food is absorbed. At the microvilli, before that, we have it's all the enzymes, and then the microvilli suck in and absorb all our good nutrition. Okay. So we need to keep our digestive tract healthy. Eat healthy foods. The microvilli do grow, they lengthen and shorten based on the volume of food and the type of food. So we want to keep them super healthy and super long. All right, let's transition on. These are the common GI symptoms that we found in our paper that most of our patients that we met experienced. So we have dysphagia, difficulty chewing, swallowing. You really don't have much of an appetite. You feel nauseous. You might have reflux. You might be vomiting. You might have abdominal pain. You might have dysmotility. And motility is moving through the digestional tract. Things might just stop at certain segments or along the whole tract. You might have diarrhea or the complete opposite of constipation, or you might just eat a little bit and feel full fast. I want to briefly mention gastroparesis because this is a lot of questions and I receive about gastroparesis, how to manage this with nutritionally, what causes it? So the basic definition is a condition characterized by delayed gastric emptying, gastric means stomach, without a mechanical obstruction. So there's nothing blocking the movement of the food and drink through the stomach. The causes, the most common causes are, we say, we don't know. And this is where mitochondria fits in, this bucket. We just don't know yet. And we do know that those that have autoimmune conditions may have gastroparesis. If you're post-viral issue, some rheumatology conditions, and it also could be a complication of diabetes. Regardless of your GI symptom, typically we can manage those symptoms by one of these ways. Okay. The challenge is when you meet with the dietitian is planning and scheduling how to make it happen and incorporate into your day. So I'll take each one of these briefly. So hydration. Okay. So first, if you have hard stools, they number one, we want to make sure that they're not hard because of your hydration status. Okay. If you have constipation, one of the number one symptoms, you may likely be constipated because your muscles aren't strong enough in your intestines to move the food along. There's a medical vocabulary word we say is peristalsis, which is the movement, the squeezing of our food throughout the intestines. So there's muscles in the intestines that move things along. If those muscles are weak, that's why you have constipation. So no amount of fiber is going to help move the squeezing. So the goal is to make your stool soft through hydration and through fruit and vegetables. And then chances are you're going to need a medication to help with the push, to help actual movement of it moving along. Also, as you may or may not know, the quality of your food will actually help your consistency of the food, and also your stool output, and of course, your overall health, well-being, and how you feel. Also, macronutrient competition is important to balance and juggle. So, macronutrients are protein, fat, carbohydrates. So, if you have gastroparesis, the number one strategy to help, I guess, feel comfortable eating is to really spread out your food over the course of the day. We want small, mini meals. Knowing that macronutrients affect gastric or stomach emptying time is important in how we strategize and plan for our food and our meals. So I, as a dietitian, will share with you what exactly, how much protein, fat, carbohydrate do you need over the course of 24 hours in your day? We may divide it during the day. And then particularly if there's fat and protein, I'm definitely going to try to come up with ideas to spread that out over the course of the day. Because if you don't know, I will tell you now, carbohydrates leave the stomach the fastest. They're the easiest to digest. Protein is next, leaves the stomach, and fat takes the longest to leave the stomach. So, which is why, say for as an example, at breakfast, if we have a breakfast of eggs and a piece of toast, we're going to feel longer for an hour, 2 hours, versus if we have a bowl of cereal, chances are we might be hungry within 30 minutes because all the food left our stomach already with the cereal. So, let's talk about how to do this, and that'll be the remaining of the talk. I do want you to be aware of how to identify signs and symptoms of dysphagia. So that's difficulty chewing, swallowing. Number one is you're coughing, choking at the time that you're swallowing. So you think you swallow something and then you feel like things are stuck in your throat. Let's get that evaluated to make sure that your muscles aren't weak enough in swallowing. I was amazed and blown away when I was training to be a dietitian that I was taught that there's 30 to 40 muscles in the back of our throat that actually coordinate a swallow. And that things that are more liquid, like a glass, like liquids, a glass of water or such, is harder to coordinate that swallow. It takes more muscles to swallow that than, say, a spoonful of pudding. Okay. So when you have problems swallowing, the hardest things to swallow are going to be the ones that are more liquidy. Also, if the muscles are weak, another sign or symptom is frequent pneumonia, frequent lung infections. That could be a sign that food is not going into down your trachea. It's not going down your esophagus. It's going down your trachea and it's going into your lungs. So that's a safety issue. Some things that young children, very young, that need to be fed, that they don't know how to communicate and they don't realize it's wrong. Whenever you go to feed the child, your child, they might just turn their head. So that could be another sign. Oh, what's going on with my child? It's, children, you have to, is it a food preference thing? They just don't want to eat it. But okay, aside from that, we have to tease out, is there a mechanical issue? So the number one way to determine if there is an issue is to have a swallowing evaluation. The most common one is called a modified barium swallow study and is typically performed by a speech language pathologist or an occupational therapist, depending on the state that you live in and their training and license and things like that. What they do is they mix food with a little bit of barium. They sit you behind a screen that looks like an X-ray screen, and they say, go ahead, go chew your food and swallow it. And they're actually following the food as it leaves your mouth, down your throat, into your upper part of your neck, and they could tell if it's going into your trachea or not. And then if it is, then they start experimenting with different consistencies of food. So if you look at the triangles on the right-hand side, the transitional food consistencies, you'll notice we have regular, we don't have to think about the consistency of food that we eat. Then we have the ones that are easy to chew. We might have soft texture, bite size. We might need just minced and chopped real finely, or we need completely pureed and smooth. Or then there's a liquid version. Now, when it comes to liquids, we have thin liquids, and thin liquids are just normal, like water, like milk, okay, lemonade, whatnot. Slightly thick could be something that is a little thicker, like a nectar juice consistency. And then the other variables, it used to be called honey thick, and honey is just what it says. When you put honey on a spoon and you let it drip, it is slow moving. As a dietitian, if somebody needs honey thick liquids, that could be concerning. I want to make sure you're getting hydrated, that you're drinking enough. When you need a feeding tube is not a bad thing. It is a helper. Okay. I know it's bad news when I have to deliver. I think you need a feeding tube, but if your food is going into your trachea and your lungs, you are not able, it's not safe. Okay. So it could be sometimes there's a handful of people I met during my whole 20 plus year that needed a feeding tube just for liquids. So you could have for partial food drink or 100% food and drink, or maybe just for liquids to meet your nutrition needs. And then another reason to have a feeding tube is just you're not able, you try everything possible, strategies, you work with your dietitian to increase calories, alter the texture of the food, alter the consistency, and we just can't do it. Your growth chart just starts to plateau, like we've seen in the previous pictures. So let's transition to what we need Not what we want. We all want, something sweet and tasty, but we definitely have to make sure we get what we need first. So we say, what are your nutritional needs? What are your nutrients that you need? And it's grouped into two buckets. So we have our macro and our micro. Macro refers to carbohydrates, protein, and fat. Micro is vitamins, minerals, and trace elements, key components. Now you'll hear about antioxidants such as polyphenols and such. Those are substances or compounds that are found in these different type of nutrients that are also very supportive, and they add a little pep to our nutrition. When you're diagnosed with a primary mitochondrial disease, your physician may prescribe a cocktail. And these are the components of a typical cocktail. The cocktail may consist of a multivitamin, a B50 complex vitamin, coenzyme Q10. You might have some antioxidants, such as vitamin E, alpha lipoic acid, or biotin. And then you might have a little splash of this, a splash of that, depending on what your diagnosis is or what the findings. The dietitian does not prescribe these. These are very high dose that are like a medical dosage. What I look at is, are these toxic levels? How are they getting absorbed? Do we have to recommend to the physician to, can we, check some blood levels of some of these to make sure that they're getting excreted and that they're used in the body and not building up and becoming toxic levels? Calories. How many calories do you need? This is a very tricky answer to the question. So we all have different calorie requirements. There are standard calorie equations for children and adults. Typically, the equations start with our resting energy needs, and then we take that number and we multiply it by an activity factor. And the activity factor includes how active you are. Are you just sitting down during a day? Or are you playing sports? That's extra energy. You need to perform the sport and make sure you're not losing weight and providing the energy to participate in the sport. With mitochondrial disease, those equations do not apply because there are many factors outside of activity that affect how many calories you need. So I listed them here. These are the most common ones. What is your muscle strength? What is your muscle bulk? By bulk, I mean how big are your muscles? If you are genetically born with muscles that are smaller than the average, that your muscles are quote unquote metabolically active, muscles need calories. So if your muscle's bigger, you'll have more calories for the bigger muscle versus less muscle. Fat contributes to our body weight, but our fat stores, our adipose tissue stores, they do not require calories. They just sit there like a lump, literally, and do nothing for us. Well, they do something for us. They but enough is enough. We have a certain amount that we need. We also look at the lung function, like I mentioned before. Are we working harder to breathe? Do we have lower needs if we're on some sort of oxygen support? I look at some medications that you're taking. There's some that I target, such as like if you're taking any corticosteroids, they might increase your blood sugar levels. They might decrease your vitamin D metabolism in the body. If you don't have enough vitamin D, you're not going to suck up calcium and you're not going to absorb calcium. So we have to think about your bone health and your bone strength and your bone density over time and many more. How active are you? How fatigued? What is your pattern of growth? If you're a child, if you're an adult, are you at your ideal weight? Are you overweight? Are you underweight? And why? And then we have these uncontrolled movements. So seizures burn calories. Dystonia burns calories. Your muscles are moving and shaking. You can't control it. You're burning calories at that point. Now, if a doctor is prescribing, say, baclofen to decrease the seizure movement, and someone's coming in and I notice their seizure activity has increased since the last time I met them and they lost weight, chances are it might be losing weight because of the increased seizures. And then I know the doctor is going to prescribe, say, baclofen, calming down those seizures, calming down the calories that are expended during those movements So you may or may not need more calories at that point. Your weight might just pick up naturally from having the medication that helps relax. So these are factors. What we did as part of our study is we have those activity factors. We created specific activity factors to list based on your all of these issues and how to calculate your overall calorie needs. We published them as supplemental material, and they'll be attached as a PDF for you to reference later today. And if you go to a mitochondrial dietitian or a dietitian that's not experienced with mitochondrial, then they could assist you. These could assist the person in figuring out how many calorie needs that you'll need. Protein. If you have no metabolic restrictions, then you want your normal protein needs no matter what. If someone has reduced calorie needs below the norm, then as a dietitian, I will take a percent of your calorie needs as protein. Your dietitian should translate the percent of calories into grams of protein and then take it a step further and make it practical for you to translate that to food. Okay, for your protein sources, let's list out all the protein sources you like. What protein sources do you typically eat day in and day out? And then what quantity of them do you need to make your protein needs over the course of a day? So as an example, the size and thickness of a palm of a woman's hand is 3 ounces, or we say the size and thickness of a deck of cards is 3 ounces. Every ounce of animal protein contains 7 grams of protein. So if we know there's 3 ounces in the palm of our hand, 7 times 3 is 21. So my palm will be 21 grams of protein. So a child might need 21 grams of protein and be done for the day. An adult might need 2 palms of protein. And then you say to yourself, okay, a chicken breast, a really thick, plump one, is 5 ounces. So if I need 3 ounces at a meal, okay, I need 3/4 of that chicken breast, and so on. Or I'm going to read a label for the food. I also want you to know something common misconception is about the type of protein that we eat. Not all protein is made the same, contains the same type of amino acids that make up the protein source, and not all protein is absorbed the same. So there's animal protein and then there is plant-based protein. Both are wonderful sources of protein, but I want you to know that not all is absorbed the same, which is why I kind of mentioned that little microvilli at the start of the picture. I want to give you an example. So say soy protein is very common in our food supply. You may have an infant that requires a soy infant formula, or you're an adult that wants to shop for a nutrition bar, and you have the same brand, and you compare the label to a soy base versus an animal product base. The animal product base are typically a cow milk protein, and those two proteins are commonly casein, CASEIN, or whey, WHEY. Okay, so when you compare the two nutrition labels, if the portion sizes, the serving size is the same, chances are the soy milk protein is going to have many more grams of protein listed per serving size. What I want you to know is not all that protein is absorbed into your body. So yes, technically that product could advertise high protein, high this, high that. But me, as a dietitian, I want to know what is your body absorbing? And are you absorbing the number of grams that you're going to need in a 24-hour period to support your growth? I also want you to know another common misconception about supplements. So, unlike bodybuilding, if you just consume protein supplements thinking you're going to build muscle, does not work. If you have a diagnosis or a muscle condition where your genetics are going to dictate that your muscles are going to be smaller in size than average, you cannot consume a lot of protein that you're going to grow and make your muscles bigger. No. I want you to really understand that. It's a very common question I get asked. And also, I want you to know another misconception is that if you are consuming a little bit of calories and you're adding protein, say a powder, to the small amount of calories, your protein is going to be used for energy and not be used for the purpose of building muscle, supporting your organ function. So it's very, very important that you meet your calorie needs first, and then within the calories, the certain percent of those calories is going to come from protein. Let's talk about hydration. When I first started out in our mitochondrial clinic, I was amazed about how different, and I still think of an adolescent and an adult. They still resonate with me after, many years of meeting with them. How different they felt just by increasing their hydration alone, that they made them felt so different. So yes, you can feel tired if you're not hydrated. A number one sign or symptom that you're not drinking enough is looking at your poops, your stool. What's the consistency of your stool? Are they hard or are they soft and mushy? I hate to say like peanut butter, but that is ideal. Okay. If you have balls in your poop, that is one sure sign you are definitely not consuming enough fluid. Also, you could just look at your skin. My skin right now tells me I didn't drink enough over the last few days. Does your skin look like an alligator? Does it have like a crepe paper feel? If you pinch your skin and it doesn't rebound back as quickly and it stays, a little wrinkly, you didn't drink enough. If you have a diet that is thick in liquids, you definitely want to make sure that you're getting enough fluid and maintaining hydration. Also important is spread out your fluid intake throughout the course of the day. Just like food, just like vitamin minerals, you cannot consume everything at once. Our kidneys have an extremely important role in filtering and monitoring how much gets absorbed at once through our body. So if anyone ever had an ultrasound scan and you were told to load up on 32 ounces of fluid a couple hours before the scan, you know you're going to have a lot of urine output shortly after. So you're not absorbing that. So spread it out. How are you going to improve your hydration? So these are some tips, strategies. So did you know that fruit contributes to hydration? Not bananas and avocados. All right, they're not juicy enough. But if I say to you need X number of ounces of fluid to drink per day, or you're consuming this much and you need 8 ounces more a day, that would be great. I also noticed you weren't eating any fruit. Why don't we do two things at once and eat fruit and get hydrated at the same time? When you cut up fruit, the quantity is equal to ounces. So if you have a half a cup of cut up fruit, like watermelon or berries or other melons, that counts for the same amount of fluid. 4 ounces of cut up fruit, 4 ounces of fluid that contributes to your hydration. Of course, with mitochondrial disease, we're going to say, hey, let's eat and focus on those high antioxidant fruits, such as the berries, and I'll give you a short list later on. Sometimes we just don't like to drink, just behaviorally. So, children, sometimes to get motivated to drink, we need to make it exciting, like a fun, I call it the fun cup. Do we need a princess cup, a Spider-Man, or a Batman cup? If you're an adult, sometimes you need like a straw. A lot of adults, for some reason, I think I'm one of them, I'll drink more if I have a cup with a straw. Sometimes you might be too weak to drink through a straw. If you see an occupational therapist, they might say, cut the straw in half, because it's a lot of muscle strength to actually suck through the straw itself. In that case, if you still can't, your muscles are that weak that you have trouble sucking, then there might be in the middle at the bottom called a specialized adaptive cup. So these are cups, ones that maybe you, if you have a child, there's one that's called like a honey bear cup. that you squeeze it at the bottom that actually does the muscle strength of your getting the fluid into someone's mouth, instead of them having to use their muscles to slurp and to drink. Sometimes you just need more encouragement. You say to yourself or your loved one, couple more sips, just take a couple more sips, okay, each time. And then maybe by the end of the day, you add 8 more ounces just by taking a couple sips. If you have a child or yourself and you just don't like drinking, aside from behavioral things and just not wanting to, ask yourself, is it because of there's an issue with your muscle strength? And then, of course, definitely ask for a swallowing evaluation. Let's transition into planning what we eat.